proclaiming the gospel to the Jew first and also to the Greek. Shalom and welcome to the Everlasting Nation, a radio ministry of International Board of Jewish Missions.
This is Mark Oshman with the International Board of Jewish Missions, presenting another radio Bible broadcast. With our last session, we began a series on Jewish evangelization and the need to practice it for Christians. We left off with the observation of the Jewish high priest in Acts chapter 5, when he exclaimed to Peter and John that, quote, "Ye have filled Jerusalem with your doctrine," unquote. Thus we see that the early believers evangelized the Jews in their midst. Indeed, they commanded Christians to do otherwise, likewise. According to the 11th chapter of Acts, the early Christians originally evangelized, quote, "none but the Jews only," unquote. That would shortly change, as we see in the book of Acts. Nonetheless, Peter addressed the first gospel message ever preached and brought that message to Jews of Judea and Jerusalem, assembled from various territories. Though God called Paul to be an apostle to the Gentiles, it was Paul's practice to go into synagogues and preach the gospel to the Jewish people. As he informed the Jews of Pisidian Antioch in Acts chapter 13, quote, "By him, Jesus Christ, by him all that believe are justified from all things, from which he could not be justified by the law of Moses," unquote. In the third chapter of his first epistle, Peter exhorted his readers to, quote, "be ready always to give an answer to every man that asketh you a reason of the hope that is in you, with meekness and fear," unquote. Some people might raise objections against preaching the gospel to the Jewish people. Here are several of the main objections that people raise. Someone might ask, wouldn't the covenant God made with Abraham be sufficient for Jewish people to maintain fellowship with God? The proper response to that is, no! In the prophecy of Jeremiah, contained in the 31st chapter of that book, God explicitly declared that he would make a new covenant with his people, unlike the agreement he previously had with them, the covenant God made with Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and confirmed with Moses on Mount Sinai. Why so? A changed situation necessitated a different covenant to handle it. Let's suppose you were an Israelite at the foot of Mount Sinai, awaiting the return of Moses from on top of that mountain, when he brought down the Ten Commandments, written with the finger of God. Would you have raised this protest? We don't need any of that legalism. We already have an agreement with God through Abraham. No, you wouldn't do that, not when you and your companions had already declared that, quote, "all that the Lord hath spoken we will do," unquote. An affirmation recorded in Exodus chapter 19. On that occasion, you explicitly acknowledge that a new relationship with God, namely Israel as God's peculiar people, a new relationship with God required a new covenant with him. What argument then would you advance against having another new relationship with God? Namely, save Jews and save Gentiles together as part of an entity known as the body of Christ. What argument would you have against this relationship with God, requiring a new agreement with God? Many Christians hesitate to evangelize Jews because they believe that Jewish people are especially resistant to the gospel. Some Jews do believe that Christianity harbors an inner resentment towards Judaism and its tenets. They might cite the Holocaust as the largest anti-Jewish outrage, and include, for good measure, Jews being treated badly during the Crusades and the mob outbreaks in Europe. In our next session, we'll learn how to handle this objection. This is Mark Oshman with the International Board of Jewish Missions, presenting another radio Bible program.
You've been listening to the Everlasting Nation, a ministry of International Board of Jewish Missions. For more information, you can contact us at 423-876-8150 or go online to ibjm.org. Until next time, may God bless and shalom.